The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, June 5th, 2009. This is episode number 180 and I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today bringing you all kinds of fantastic, super crazy stuff about motorcycle road racing. So, this past weekend, let's see, we had all kinds of good stuff. We had, of course, MotoGP and the 250s and the 125s and everything at Mugello. We had World Superbikes and World Supersports at Miller Motorsport Park in Utah. It was an intense weekend. There was a lot of stuff going on, a lot of really, really great stuff. On top of that, we've had some other issues. One thing I want to touch on real quick is that Peter Lenz, who you may have heard of on this show here. We've had Peter Lenz on the show before doing a recording. Peter Lenz is a young motorcycle racer. He's racing in the adult classes, even though he's, I believe, 13 years old. And unfortunately, had a big crash about a week ago. And this is not good stuff at all. So check it out, peterlenz.com. Of course, there's going to be a website link on the show notes. And there's also a big thread going on rideon2.com about it in the forums there. Let's wish Peter Lenz well, that he recovers from this. He's had quite a few injuries, and this is not a good thing. He's a young guy, so he'll be able to recover from this, and he'll be back out there and everything else. But it's definitely not something we want to see. So our best wishes go out to Peter Lenz, and we hope that you get real, real better real, real soon, Peter. This has just been very, very upsetting. Other than that, well, why don't we go ahead and continue with the injuries and things like that. Regis Laconi, this is good news. Regis Laconi has walked. He's fast recovering. He's doing all right. So that's a good thing, and he'll be moving along right there towards his recovery. And let's see, next thing you know, well, we got the Isle of Man TT on Monday, so we're probably going to have some more injuries to be talking about, but that is a fantastic race if you're into that sort of thing. Isle of Man TT, just guys, I mean, actually, there are several real road races, as they call them, real road races, because you're racing on real life roads with, you know, hedges and pubs and lamp standards right next to the track and all of that sort of thing. But that's coming up this weekend, the Isle of Man TT. You can check it out. It's on the web. Of course, there'll be a link on MotoGPOD.com. And Isle of Man, you can't miss it. If you're a motorcycle racing fan, you got to check it out. And also check out RealRoadRacing.com. That's another website. And I'll put all these links in the website. And you can check it out. Hopefully, we won't have any problems on the MotoGPOD website. So, moving on, let's see. How about some good news? First of all, Jim Race went out there to Miller Motorsports Park. He recorded all kinds of great stuff, and we've only included the tiniest amount of some of the stuff that Jim got out there. But we've included that in the show, some stuff with Eugene Laverty, and then we have a big, long call with Jules, where we do a wrap-up of Mugello, MotoGP at Mugello, and then also World Superbikes at Miller Motorsports Park in Utah. And then another bit with Eugene after the race. So we've got a big, big show, and I don't think we should go on any more about it before we get right into it. So let's just jump right on into it.
All right, Jim Race from OGPOD once again, and I've got Eugene Laverty at the end of Sunday. We just finished the World Superbike race, another win by speed. It seems to be coming rote, but Eugene, how you doing?
Fairly good. I finished up second in the race, so can't be too displeased with that. A win would have been nice, but it wouldn't really have made much sense if I had a win, because it seems to be the case this year. I win one, and don't win one, then win the next, so Misano might be the one.
Off and on, I mean, yeah, back and forth, a 50% margin is great, but it's not going to lead to the championship in the end.
No, it's more of a joke. It's, going on about the 50% win record than anything, but the most important thing was the fact that I didn't win today, but I still finished second. I've been strong all weekend, a little bit stronger than Kyle has most of the weekend, whereas he's always been dominant up until Kyle Ami, so we're hopefully turning things around a little bit now.
So that race was shaping up a bit like Aston towards the end, until Keenan came up and kind of spoiled everything. You led nearly every lap.
Yeah, across the line, the lead every lap. Kyle had passed me a few times in different areas, but I bounced right back at him, and I just wanted to hold the pace because I knew it was a few load light, and I had my bike set up for that part of the race, and sure enough, I did my fastest lap with a few to go, but I had a little bit of a harsh feeling with the front, which I didn't expect, but I was still able to do the lap times, and the last lap, I did everything I could, exited well out of the corner before where Keenan passed me, but it wouldn't have mattered if I had another 10 bike lengths on him getting in that corner. I think he was still going to try and have a go at me. He was a little bit desperate, but fair play, made the move stick. It was unfortunate where we both stayed on. That's why I was fairly happy after the race, because I was just happy I stayed on. We both easily could have been down there. 9 times out of 10, we both would have ended up on our backside, because I was just about to go on the gas to exit the corner, and he hit me about 10k's faster than me, and I didn't even see who it was. So just lucky to stay on, but I think if I hadn't been there, Keenan was going to end up in the Salt Lake.
Yeah, a little bit of classic local knowledge there. Yikes. And so you move on now, and you know, you've had a win at Kyle Ami. You're here now, and you're going to spend a couple of days here in the States, or are you heading home soon?
No, we head home tomorrow, fly out around midday. So I've been out here in America since last Thursday out at Josh Hayes' place, and I've enjoyed it. Did a little bit of motocross and cycling, and even got a few tan lines, and which is starting to peel out. But I've enjoyed my time out here. I'm ready for home, though. I haven't been home for more than a day since March, so I'm looking forward to spending a bit of time at home, and hopefully the weather will be good to get out my push bike as well.
Brendan. All right, well, thanks again for entertaining MotoGP BOD and myself this weekend, and we look forward to your exploits and more stuff on Top of the Box.
Cheers. Hopefully next time out in Misano, we'll be back there.
Right on. Thanks. All right. Hello. This is Jim Race with MotoGPOD. And once again, I'm actually with Eugene Laberty, only instead of just having him on the phone, I've got him face to face. Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good.
I've qualified second today, so at the moment I can't complain.
You guys seem to get going pretty well in FP1 yesterday, and didn't seem like it took you a lot of time to adapt to the track. Went from 20th to what, 6th yesterday?
I think it was maybe 5th or 6th after first practice, and that's where I need to be. In Kyle Ami, that was the story, whereas every round before, I'd started right back on maybe 11th, 12th position after the first couple of practices and had to work at it, where we've got the bike working right away now, so we don't have to change so much on it. All those other rounds we're still working to find the correct set, and now we've got a really good base and we don't have to stray too far away from it. I think Aston was probably the only place where we did start right up in there, and again we won there, so it seems to work out pretty good when we start right up in there and keep working away.
You mentioned Aston, and we can talk about Kyle Ami, but I won't even go there. We'll just stick to this weekend. But you're on a bit of a winning streak. You're currently 50% still?
Yeah, still 50% win record, so it's been nice. Unfortunately, I had a poor result in Valencia. Things just didn't work out qualifying and whatever else, and ended up only finishing 9th. So that's lost me a few points on Cal, whereas Cal hasn't been off the podium since Qatar, really. So I think I just need to be racking up consistent podiums and wins whenever they're there, and we'll see tomorrow. It's looking like it could be myself, last course, and Kyle at the front, so we'll have a better idea after morning warm-up who's really got the race pace and who's just been doing it on a soft tire.
So what do you think of this Miller track? We know that Kyle Ami was a bit of a bumpy circuit. How about this place?
Well, it's a lot better than it looks on TV. I have to say the camera angles don't do it justice. It looked quite boring on TV, but there's a lot more to it than I thought. So when I got around it on Thursday, I was pleasantly surprised. And so far, so good. I've really liked the flow and nature of the track, and there's a few tricky corners where the faster riders really can suss it out and make some time around. So I've been trying some different lines even still at the end of that practice session, and I'm pretty well good for the race.
When you talk about the faster areas, do you still see that there's places that you can make up time?
Not really. I'm pretty much there with the race pace. There might be a few areas where I can think about it. I've been trying one corner in particular, a different line, turn 5. It's a really strange corner. It's a bit like Kyle Amway, turn 9, I think it was, at the top of the hill. So I just still try to figure out a few things, I guess, but I'm pretty much all set for the race.
Okay. Your top speed down the front straight was, I think you were second, so you're right up there on speed. We know that, so this is right after qualifying, and Pitt crashed out, and from what I understand, I don't know if he's injured, but he did not get out to make a time, so he'll not be there, another person that's not going to be on your radar for this race.
And that's not good news for me, really, because I want guys like Andrew in there to get him in between myself and Cal, because it's not much good when it's me and Cal 1-2 every weekend. You're not going to gain many points. So it was looking like Andrew had the pace all through practice, and when he's got the pace all through practice, he's going to be pretty well there in the race, because he's a much better racer. So I don't know if he'll be allowed to start in the back of the grid tomorrow, but unfortunately, even if he does, he won't really be able to figure.
So you think you're pretty good to go, not a whole lot of changes need to be made until for tomorrow?
Pretty much all set. I'll just try a full tank in the morning just to see how that fades, but we know with this bike how much it changes with as the fuel load lightens, so we've been bearing that in mind all through practice when we've been making some chassis changes, and a lot of what we've been doing has been with very little fuel in the tank, because that's when the bike's at its best, so that's a good thing. I can do the lap times at the end, but so long as the bike's pretty good under a full tank, then you know it's just a matter of getting a balance.
Did you get any laps in on used tire today?
Yeah, we did get a lot of laps in the race tire. So my race pace was really good. It's not much off of what I did on the soft tire, to be honest, and really consistent. So we'll see in more warm-up if last course and Cal really do have the pace that I've got.
Well, I appreciate it, Eugene, and best of luck tomorrow. And if you don't get mobbed with a win, which you will anyway, hopefully I'll get a chance to talk to you. Cheers.
No problem.
Right on. Thanks.
All right, got Jules on the phone. How you doing tonight, Jules?
Good, good, good. How are you?
No, doing very well, thank you.
So you got your internet back, I see?
Yes, I got my internet back. There's only about, maybe a couple hours that I had no internet in our once-a-year thunderstorm that we have around here, where the lightning and everything, and it knocked out some power. And my power never went out, but the internet went out for a little while.
And I got this panicky text saying, I lost my internet. What am I supposed to do now?
Yeah. It's like, oh, my God. What am I going to do? But it was almost getting to the point where I was going to start surfing around and see if I could find an open wireless. But I think most of my neighbors have theirs locked down. So, and it wasn't really that, you know, it's not that big a deal. I had power. I was, you know, watching TV, talking to my sister. So it was mostly a joke as much as anything.
Right.
But in any case, we did have some good racing this weekend, which I've just been kind of finishing up on, catching up. I watched most of the World Supersports just tonight, a little while ago. So uh-huh. Wednesday night, as we're talking. That was some good racing. They were really, you know, it's always good, World Supersports, but I thought that one went really well at Miller.
Cool. I did not see that race, and I definitely should, but I have not had a chance yet.
Yeah. If you get a chance to watch that one was a satisfying race. And we'll talk about World Superbikes, hopefully, in a little bit, if we get a chance to cover it a bit, because I think we definitely want to talk about it a little bit. Hopefully, yep, we get a chance to talk about it in depth. But first of all, let's talk about the love of our lives, MotoGP, because they were at Mugello. Yes, nestled in the rolling hills of Tuscany.
That's right.
And yes, which Nick Harris actually made a comment, and I at the very, very beginning of the broadcast, and I had to back it up to double check what he said. He didn't say nestled in the rolling hills. He said, as the sun comes over the hills of Tuscany.
Nice.
And I said, that's close enough. So, bit of an odd race with the weather conditions and everything. Another flag to flag, which I know you're they're your favorites, Jules.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. And but you know, after a dry qualifying session, and just
the qualifying session was really incredible, actually.
Yeah, I didn't actually see it, so
yeah, I watched it. It was like the old days, you know, when we had qualifying tires, because the Mugello track was just really eating up the softer compound. last year when we still have qualifiers, they were down to basically doing one hot lap, maybe being able to squeeze two, but very, very rarely. So here they were doing like three, but still, you know, they were done after three or four. So there was a little bit of that timing where like a couple of the riders at the very end got an extra lap that's just barely perfect timing, you know. The big, of course, news was that Caparossi ended up knocking Rossi off the front row with the Suzuki, which right. I did not expect. I know Caparossi is incredible at this track, but I just didn't expect that he could do it on the Suzuki, get on the front row.
No, I agree.
Again, I mean, he did it last year too, but this was just awesome. So,
yeah, I like you said, I knew Caparossi would do well. You know it on one level because of he had such a history at this track and everything, but it's still a bit of a surprise to see him doing as well as he does. Particularly, there was one shot. It was real early in the race. It might have been, in fact, right at the end of the first lap when they're running down the straight, and Stoner and Dovizioso just power past Caparossi. Yeah, I mean, it was like he was standing still, and he might have had, you know, might have hit a puddle. There was some issues with traction control and stuff acting a little bit wonky for several riders, you know, where they hit a puddle and it kind of confused the traction control, stuff like that. So maybe it was something like that. I didn't specifically read about that specific incident, but it was amazing to watch just the Ducati just walk away from the Suzuki.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, yeah.
But, you know, on the other hand, then Caparossi's just, you know, pushing it and catching up in the corners and Vermeulen also doing very well, mm-hmm. you know, so, it's a good race. So qualifying
it was a good race, despite the fact that there was a flag to flag. And I think that goes to back to Mugello just has some kind of a magic spell on it that it always generates good racing. I'm saying despite, because I really think that the race was kind of broken up by the tire, going into the pits and this kind of a random tossing around, you know, because I just loved seeing, you know, Melandri up front and Caparossi leading the race for a little bit during the wet part of the race. And I was like, oh, just, you know, this is, it's going to get ruined. I know it's going to, all this great, like, surprise and this great racing is going to get ruined by the tire change. And thankfully it didn't, because we actually did get a good race when they switched to the dries. It wasn't like Le Mans where we were seeing, you know, the one race, which was basically Pedrosa catching up to Dovizioso and then passing him, and that was it, you know?
Yeah, Le Mans was to me, was interesting on one level because of one, I mean, the whole Rossi in and out of the pit so many times thing. Lorenzo's either fantastic luck or masterful pit strategy or combination of both, you know, it made it interesting as a one-time thing. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's not like that's the kind of racing I want to see all the time.
Right.
But it was like fascinating might be a better term than interesting. How does that sound? You know, it was like, wow.
Sure.
You know? And I didn't get that with Mugello for the flag to flag. I agree that the flag to flag and the pit stops and everything, it just kind of screwed things up. You know, it felt like the first half of this race was just a barn burner, really, really great stuff and everything. And then we had, you know, the second half of the race, I wasn't nearly as enthused.
Right, right.
Even though it was actually still, you know.
It was a really good race.
Good stuff, you know? Yeah, exactly. But, so, it was a bit weird. Back to qualifying real quick. Any other comments on qualifying, or should we just, you know, kind of jump right in and talk a little bit about what happened in the race and maybe some comments that we had? Because we had a lot of reader email, and I know you and I both had some that we wanted to bring up.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't have anything else to say about qualifying, except that Rossi was very, like, I think he was surprised and he's never been off the front row in his entire career, so that's pretty
at Mugello.
Pretty amazing. Yeah, at Mugello, yeah. Right.
Yeah, exactly, and it probably was a bit of a surprise and everything for him there. With his helmet, he had his helmet of his hands holding his head.
Yeah.
Like, that's the stress, you know, because it is such a, you know, huge weekend of, you know, there's a lot on his plate and everything else. So, because this was also the race where he had the screaming Rossi last year, wasn't it?
Yep. Yep, yeah. Exactly.
So, But yeah, so yeah, good front row. Lorenzo Stoner Caparossi, like you said, it was interesting to see Caparossi there. Now the start though was what happened with Lorenzo. I mean, blah. And I did read somewhere that it was a traction control issue, but I'm not sure of any other. You know,
that's all I've read is traction control. He maybe gunned it a little too much, whatever. But he was spinning. The tire was spinning, and he basically felt about 14th place, then regained to 9th by the first corner. So, yeah.
But, yeah, and meanwhile, though, Pedrosa gets a fantastic start because he qualified in 8th, but gets, you know, a fantastic start and rockets up. And was looking like he was going to get the whole shot, but actually it wasn't Pedrosa that did get the whole shot, was it? Or was it? But even there was a huge, you know, race for that first corner, which was great stuff, and Suzuki coming around the outside. I mean, it's just awesome. And at right that point, I knew this is going to be a good race.
And then
the craziness began, and I've got to look at my lap chart just to see how crazy it was, because we had so many different guys leading, and the lap chart doesn't even show it, because the lap chart only shows who was leading when they crossed the line.
Right.
You know, but right. You don't count for all the lead changes during the rest of the lap and everything, because there was some fantastic stuff. And seeing Dovizioso and battling Stoner, passing Stoner, and you know, all of these sort of things. It was just
Mulin led and Melandri led, and you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Melandri. And Melandri actually got credited with one lap, but he was officially the leader on lap 10. So
cool.
Yeah, so even over and above his middle of the lap antics and whatnot. Yeah, it was good stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, the race really was between the top three guys and then a couple of spoilers in there, Caparossi. To me, the most interesting part came towards the end when Caparossi was ahead of both Lorenzo and Rossi, and Stoner was by this point was leading. Lorenzo was leading Rossi. Rossi was looked like he was actually gaining on Lorenzo, but then they were going down the straight, and Lorenzo caught Caparossi, but Caparossi shut the door on Rossi, and Rossi had to slow down, I think, more than he wanted to, and that I think was the cause of Rossi not being able to catch Lorenzo. At that point, it was only 3 laps left, and he still had to pass Caparossi. It took him an entire lap to pass Caparossi. Obviously, those two have battled at Mugello many times, but that was it. You know, that was the end was basically decided right there.
Yeah,
you knew Rossi was going to go past Caparossi. Caparossi just did not have the speed on down the straight to be able to hold up the Yamaha. So.
No, but he had the cojones in the corners,
yeah.
and the talent, you know, and he was riding a very defensive race and did make it very, very difficult for Rossi to pass him.
Then when Dovizioso got past Caparossi, he almost ended up catching Rossi. So there was this moment that there was, you know, at the very end when they were going down the straight where it looked like Dovi might actually pass Rossi, and man, he would have been ecstatic, of course. And
Dovizioso.
Yeah, Dovizioso.
Rossi, not so much.
Not so much.
But yeah, you're right. That was of the sort of the second part of the race. That was, I think, the bit that stands out for me as far as of like the excitement level, because it was almost like I was semi tuning out on the after. I mean, because the tire changes all came in relatively early. Was like lap 8, lap 10, that range. I mean, Toslin went in crazy early. Toslin did like Rossi did at Le Mans, where. Kind of figured he's going to take a chance and jump in, and fortunately didn't fall off. But a lot of the other guys waited a few more laps.
And almost paid off, because at one point he was like 4 seconds faster than anybody else at the track.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when they all decided that they're going to go in and change pretty much at that point, because they knew that they were, because I think their tires were going off and all of that.
So this might be a good time to bring up Jesse Walter's email. He had a very interesting theory, which is that the factory teams are sort of using the satellite teams as sacrificial lambs, the way he put it. Every make actually had their satellite team going in first, but I think that it's mostly just a coincidence, because those riders have less. They want to roll the dice more than the factory guys. But it's kind of like a win-win, because the satellite teams want to go in there earlier, and the factory teams gain information, you know, very critical information.
Yeah, and actually I think when you put it that way, I that probably makes more sense than the conspiracy theory. I mean, I love a good conspiracy theory, and I'll jump all over it. But yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that one, because I think that that's probably more likely to be true. That
I'm not really disagreeing with Jesse. I'm actually saying, you know, it's just that it's not like they're saying, hey, listen, you guys got to go in. It just
right.
It just works out.
Right, which is the sides. That's the conspiracy theory part, where the factories are telling the satellite teams, you know, you must come in and change tires so that we can, you know, glean knowledge from this. And, you know, no, I don't think that's happening. But I think that that you're right, the way it works out and everything. So, but yeah, that was a good one. So thanks, Jesse, for that tire change strategy. We also had another interesting email about tires from Tim Bennett, and he sent this one, and unfortunately I never answered Tim directly, so sorry Tim, but now we're reading it. He was saying, two races in a row start with sketchy drying conditions. Both time there's drama with starting on wets and then having to figure out when to come in for slicks, and both times the initial wet conditions weren't really wet enough to my eye, at least, to demand full wets. The thought occurs to me that running an intermediate or cut slick might give the rider the versatility to run fast in the wet at the start and also run well as the track dries, and not require them to stop for a thing. So do you know if they banned cut slicks with all the other tire rule changes, or are the teams just choosing not to try them? And I got to admit, I don't know. And yeah, I didn't get a chance to look at the rules.
Yeah, yeah. It's very interesting that to bring that up. But, you know, it may have to do with only a certain amount of compounds allowed. You know, there's the choices that the teams have to make ahead of time. And intermediate might not just make it in there, and no team is going to take that chance, and they're not actually going to. Maybe they're just not allowed to make any changes to the tire. Maybe they're not allowed to go out there with the razor blades
to cut them, up. Yeah. You know, yeah, which used to be a real art. And that makes a lot of sense. That when you're limited on the number of tires, you're going to want to. Although wets, they're not limited on the number of, but if they're cutting up a slick, you know, right. you're not gonna. Use up a number of your thing. We'll have to do some research on that and check that out. Although, when Tim says that he didn't think that it really wasn't wet enough, I think Mugello was really wet. It didn't look it. It kind of didn't look it because there wasn't a lot of rain on the camera lenses and you know, wasn't like Indy last year and all that sort of thing with water, you know, rivers across the track. But I think it was pretty darn wet out there.
You could tell it was wet because they stayed out. Actually, most of the riders stayed out longer than they did at Le Mans.
Right, Le Mans might have been a bit borderline, but even there, it was pretty wet.
No, there you could actually see the rooster tails and stuff. So I totally agree that it didn't look as wet, but I think that it was at least as wet or wetter.
And in those kind of conditions, when you are running the full wet, you know, you have to find the patches of water to keep the tires cool and all of that sort of thing. And that's just the way it is. It's always that sort of strategy is going to kind of come into it. And that's one thing where you and I. See, I don't know what the best rule is for a rain race. You know what I mean? It's just there's so many possibilities, and they all have pluses and minuses and disadvantages. This flag-to-flag, I think, is not the best way. But I will, like I said, Le Mans was fascinating. I just hope that we don't have another one. You know, it better not be raining in Spain in 2 weeks. Because one week from now. Because enough of the full wet races. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay,
full wet would be great if it just stayed.
Well, yeah, exactly. A rain. Okay, I mean, look at the flag to flag, semi drying conditions. Enough of that is what.
Yeah, I mean, we had an incredible 250 race, unbelievable 250 race. I think we should just go back to, you know, red flagging the race and doing what do you call that, aggregate time.
Yeah, but that has a whole host of problems, Jules.
Yeah, so what?
It's all kinds of stuff. You saw guys where they, you know, they push, get in the lead, raise your hand. you got to call the race and all that kind of thing. And so you get the sort of questionable things. And then the aggregate, who likes an aggregate race? That's just confusing. I mean, you know, you can kind of figure it out, but it's still when you get those rare situations where a guy actually finishes, you know, crosses the line second, but still wins the overall race. You know, that's a bit of a, I don't know, it's kind of lame. So, you know, like I said, there is a downside to that as well.
It's pretty rare, though. Well, when we had aggregate races, it was very rare that it actually happened. So, you know, it's all conjecture. Whereas we actually know that the flag-to-flag races just shake things up, like, ridiculously since the rule was introduced.
Yeah, on the other hand, the flag-to-flag races are comparatively rare as well. You remember how long we went before they were actually we even had one?
Yeah, no, the first one was actually, you know, it produced some great results, but I don't think that it was the, I don't know, never mind. I mean, yeah, I don't like the rule.
We could go on about it forever, yeah.
Yeah, we could waste an entire show doing it, so.
Yeah, we'll have to do that in the off-season or something, where we're looking for something to talk about. Other stuff that happened in the race.
Well, Pedrosa crash. I think that's the biggest news going into the next round is that Pedrosa's going to miss Catalunya, it looks like. Well, more than looks like that. I mean, he's definitely going to miss Catalunya at this point. He broke his femur. It was actually his femur was fractured in during practice. He didn't even fall.
And he had something with his, like, disconnecting muscle from bone and...
He just got, it was like a near miss, you know, high side, and he recovered, but apparently he just completely messed up his leg, and he was hurting the whole time. You could tell. They didn't actually show him switching bikes because that would have been interesting to see. So yeah, but anyway, so he crashed and he got pretty beat up, and it doesn't look like he's going to make it to his home round. He has to spend, I think, like a week immobilized.
Yeah, but they didn't show it. You're right. They didn't show a lot of them. And it is, it's kind of, you know, when you've got that kind of race, it's sort of interesting, but there was enough going on track that they didn't, you know, they weren't concentrating too much on that.
Okay. So this is a good time for me to interject my rant of the week.
Oh, okay. Rant of the week from Jules.
My rant of the week is that there's a pattern emerging in the coverage of MotoGP. It's almost like Dorna is actually like sending them a memo, like, on the last three laps of the race, you must show the satellite teams and whatever. It's like they get some coverage towards the end where the excitement builds or something like that. Because without fail, I was saying this even as I was watching the race live. I'm like, I bet they're gonna, even though we're seeing a great battle up front, they're still going to cut to, you know, some, I don't know, DeAngelis riding around. And they did. They cut away, and you're just sitting there like, come on, show me what's going on with Caparossi and Rossi and Llorente. You know, did you notice that?
I actually, thinking about it, I do remember that there was, like, you know, where, oh, there's DeAngelis kind of a thing, and yeah, to get him some TV time.
There's Hayden and Vermeulen, and it's like, hello, that's great, but please, there's actually a race going on.
Do you think that's a Gresini conspiracy? Gresini putting the pressure on? He says, I got to have some camera time. You know, I'm not going to get San Carlo to sponsor me unless you show them on TV once in a while.
I think there is, you know, some requirement that they have to do that. But and maybe they're saying do it towards the end of the race because that's when people are, you know, really paying attention. I don't know.
I'm going to have to pay attention to, like, when that happens because I do remember the shot of DeAngelis, but I haven't noticed any particular a pattern of showing the satellite teams in the last few laps, and I'm going to pay more attention to that and see if that's true. And I wouldn't doubt it. And honestly, to be fair, Dorn has got to keep these teams happy so that they continue to participate. The teams have to keep their sponsors happy so that they continue to spend money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there might be something to that. As far as Pedrosa's crash, you could tell that was a bad one because wasn't getting up too fast.
No. He was not good. Really beat up. And this, you know, goes back to like the preseason stuff that in the preseason we were talking about him and he did
kind of
fragile. The kids getting this just so damaged. It's terrible. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I feel really bad for the guy. And you know, this is going to be very painful for him to get back for Catalunya. He might go out there on Friday for the practice, kind of the way he did Laguna last year, and then say, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Or it's not worth it. My times are just too crappy or something like that. So we'll see. Well, on the other hand, you know, he did that 2006 Sepang, so.
Yeah, and this is Catalunya. Yeah. It's home round and all of that. And speaking of home rounds and Catalunya, have you heard anything about Sete Gibernau?
So he is actually going to make it back. That's the latest.
For Catalunya?
For Catalunya, yeah.
Yeah, I figure you know he's going to want to.
Oh, yeah. And, no, it's actually on the front page of MotoGP.com today, like this evening.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Yeah. So shows you how much prep I did. I didn't even look at that.
Well, no, it, like literally went up like a couple hours ago.
Okay, cool. And that's good. I'm glad because that was when we were talking about, you know, oddball teams and strange sponsors, and we've had that whole argument. This is a classic of, you know, these. I hope that these guys can stay in.
Yeah, Yeah, for that round especially.
Yeah, yeah, and Sete's getting pretty used to a broken collarbone. I mean, I think he spent, you know,
half his life with one.
Exactly. So it shouldn't be a problem anymore. Pop a couple Vicodin, go out there and ride a motorcycle. So, yeah, all right. Let's see.
So we're not really doing justice to the race. The race was good in the end. And we had, you know, Stoner win the race. This is the first time Ducati has won at Mugello. So they were extremely happy about it, obviously.
Yes.
And it's actually only the second time I think they've even had a podium. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was fantastic to see. And... it was the third time. And, you know, and Rossi didn't win, so...
Which shakes things up.
Up in a great way, yeah. Especially because Lorenzo beat him. So now we've got Stoner leading the championship by 4 points from Lorenzo, who's leading Rossi by 5 points. And then we've got a big gap of 24 points to Danny Pedrosa. And Andrea Dovizioso, because of his finish, is now just a point behind the Pedrosa. So that battle's heating up.
Right. Right. Yeah. And Dovizioso is showing great consistency and all that. So, you know, he might, if this injury affects Pedrosa, you know, that's good news for Dovizioso.
Yeah.
Because got to beat your teammate, right? Speaking of
team... Exactly. Go ahead. You do it.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of teammates, other humongous disappointment on the Ducati front, we're continuing to see the, you know, Casey Stoner up in the front row and Nikki Hayden on the back row.
Right.
And actually, let's see. Canepa. We wanted to mention Canepa did quite in our predictions, which we're kind of skipping our predictions because it was a rain race, and we always say that these rain races, predictions have to go out the window. Although, looking at him over, we weren't too crazy far off.
We weren't far off, but it's, you know, but we were lucky.
Yeah, that's part of it. And with these predictions, I'm generally always, if it's on, I'm lucky. But whatever. we had both picked Canepa way down. Yeah, I had him put him dead last.
Me too.
And he did all right. What did he qualified at 13th and finished?
Ninth.
Yeah. So, it's you know, good performance from Canepa. Another one, though, this is, you know, home race. It's got the home field advantage, the home field pressure, all sorts of other things going on. So
it's the first track he's had a lot of time on also. So, you know.
Right. And that's got to factor into it as well. As far as Hayden and Callio, it's continuing to be the somewhat classic, you know, how hard it is to sort of... get the performance out of the Ducati. They qualified 16th and 17th, you know, filling the back row, and Hayden finished 12th and Callio finished 13th.
Yeah.
And the only reason Elias and DeAngelis were behind them, well, DeAngelis had an off, and what was up with Elias?
Elias also had an off.
He did?
Yeah.
So, yeah. When was that?
At the end of the straight. A minor one. It wasn't like the end just like went to the tire wall and back.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, and that sort of thing is, yeah, exactly. It's a a little bit of a gift for Hayden and Callio. So yeah. Getting some points. And all
I thought when you said speaking of teammates, I thought you were going to talk about Edwards and Tozen because Tozen was, you know, running in sixth, and then Edwards caught up with him and stuffed him again. We didn't get to see it this time, but that's the way I'm imagining it anyway.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was brutal.
Yeah.
Fairing bashing. We should have seen it. That was another battle. That would have been nice to see more of, actually, yeah. Those guys. There was quite a few guys we did not see much of because the racing up front was, you know, that's where the cameras were focused.
Except at that one crucial moment where we actually wanted to see the front and we didn't.
Exactly. The Grassini time.
Yeah.
You want to call it that. Yeah, yeah. So, all right, going down the order real quick. Casey Stoner wins. You know, good for him. Ducati's first win at Mugello, et cetera, et cetera. Jorge Lorenzo beating Rossi, which whether or not, you know, whatever factors into it, that's, you know, that's a big boost for Lorenzo, you know, to beating your teammate, as I just said, is important, and you know, beating Rossi is going to be even more important, and all of that. So, you know, he's got to be on cloud
nine. Mugello, come on, yeah. That's got to be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he's definitely got to be on cloud nine about that. Rossi podiumed in third. Dovizioso, fourth position. How far did he finish? Yeah, let's see.
He was
5/100. He was very close to Rossi with the crossing the line.
Yeah. I mean, if that front straight was a little bit longer, I think he would have gone past him because he had a better drive out of that last corner.
Yeah.
And he was drafting Rossi on top of that.
So, yeah. So that was very, very close. Fifth spot, Loris Caparossi running in, I think, overall an excellent race, to be honest with you.
Incredibly great race. Yeah. Basically, the machine failed him, I think.
Oh, yeah. And like we said, they're down on power. You know, they Caparossi can get everything he can out of that machine, but if they've got, and I don't have the thing that shows all the top speeds and all of that, the trap speeds, but
well,
I'm sure that you're going to see that the Suzuki is much less than the Ducati.
Yeah. But it's also how fast you get to that top speed, too, you know. So
that's true. Exactly. The drive all over the place. And speaking of that, was it Pedrosa that clocked just like what it was like 217 miles an hour, I believe
yes.
it was?
Yes.
Yeah, it was Pedrosa. Wow. Yeah, faster than a Formula One car. That's insanely fast.
Yeah.
And so another sort of interesting little tidbit. Carlos Edwards in six.
Way back.
21
seconds from Caparossi. So
yeah, huge. Right.
Those guys huge. In front were like way ahead.
Yeah, they were. And actually, though, real quick, that's, you know, when you look at those top five finishers, we've got, what, two Yamahas, a Ducati, a Honda, and a Suzuki.
Yeah.
That's a good spread.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, you know, that's good to see, that kind of thing.
3 seconds, just 3 seconds covering those four makes.
right. Now, granted, three of them were Italians, and that does kind of factor into it, but whatever reason, you know, still. We got good racing, and Nick Harris said something in the commentary about we said that MotoGPOD was dead, but look, best racing we ever seen.
Well, MotoGPOD is not dead.
No, MotoGP was dead. Exactly. Nick Harris did not mention MotoGPOD. I will not get excited. Minor misstep. Every now and then I interchange those two terms.
Me too.
So Edwards, then Toseland in seventh. RDP, Randy Dupuy in eighth. Got to talk about RDP. Because he, on the first few laps, was doing quite well.
Yeah.
And let's see, where was his performance? Actually, well, he finished first lap in like seventh. But the thing is at the beginning of the first lap, he was battling. It was up there. Man, Randy's desperate. Other than that, judging from the lap chart and everything, he pretty much circulated around, but, he did all right. So RDP.
He fought with Toslin for a couple of laps. But then Toslin did end up, obviously passing on, and Edwards came storming through. Edwards was talking about, how he basically just is horrible on the wets. He just can't get used to the, Bridgestone wets. And has no feeling in the front, and just loses gobs of time, and then makes it all up during the dry part. So he was saying that if it was a dry race, he would have been battling with the front guys.
Impossibility. What do you think of that? Is that Colin Edwards? We've talked about. Well, I think the term that I used was that Colin shoots his mouth off. And I mean, I like the guy. I don't get a bunch of Colin Edwards hate mail and all of that. I really do like Colin Edwards. I think he's what you want in a racer, charismatic and all of that good stuff. But you know, I think he does basically talk some smack.
Yeah, but I mean the his result is proof enough. I mean, he was going backwards in the wet, and he was just plowing from 13th up to 6th. You know, plowing through the field. So
okay, that's fair. I'll go with that. So yeah, all right. Okay, continue down. Like I said, eighth, Randy Dupuy. Ninth, Nicola Canepa. We already talked about him. Good job, Nicolo. 10th, Christopher Mullen. Probably a little bit disappointing result, and I think he lost out in the dry section.
Oh yeah.
Because he was doing quite well in the early stage of the race, and basically as soon as they switched to the dries is when he started suffering.
Yep.
Marco Melandri, 11th. Another guy that's probably a little bit disappointed with that finish.
I think he's more than a little bit disappointed because he was really doing fantastically well, and then it just
all fell apart.
We kind of knew that this on this bike it was going to be hard at Mugello for him to do much better than top 10.
Yeah, that's true. Where did actually real quick? Where did I put him? I had him in 8th. But yeah, not really a track that suited for the old motorcycle. And I think we're going to be getting into more and more of those where, Melandri may have had his 15 minutes of fame this season a little bit.
Yeah. I think Catalunya is going to be very tough. No, I think we'll see him again at, Der Sachsenring. How do you say that again?
Der Sachsenring.
Right.
Yes,
And I think actually at Laguna Seca.
Yeah, that's true. He's actually after the first year of calling Laguna Seca, a goat path or whatever the hell kind of comments he made, right. It was. I think he has come to know grip. And love Laguna Seca. Yeah. So yeah, and that'll be good. And we're going to be there, so it'll even be ever better.
Yep.
12th spot, Nicky Hayden. Already talked about him. 13th spot, Mika Kallio. Real quick with Mika, kind of got off to a good start on the season, first couple of rounds, and. Haven't heard too much from him lately.
No.
So,
no.
Yeah.
But, he it may be the... So, the Ducati guys, I think, dealing with the race, obviously except Stoner. Stoner's, from another planet. But I think these guys are struggling just to figure the bike out and to have to deal with, wet and dry conditions in the same race and changing conditions. These guys are just, it's amazing that they're even able to score points, considering how much trouble they're having just in the dry. So
that makes sense. So. Any tracks coming up? I mean, knowing Mika Kallio as you know him, do you see anything where he might be strong, where we might be able to count on him?
Assen.
Yeah. Okay.
I think Assen he might do well, and so will Nicky. I mean, if there's a track other than Laguna Seca that Nicky. Really took to right from the very beginning. I remember in the 2003 season when it was his rookie season, that was a track where he first. I don't know if he actually finished that race. I think he may have crashed out of it. But he was like. A lot of people were noticing. Hey, wait a second! This guy's really fast, and he was like 5th or something like that. But I think he crashed. Anyway, so both those guys, will be a track that I think they're good at and. Maybe they'll make something happen. We'll see.
Right. And then that's coming up after Catalunya, which that one's kind of coinciding nicely with my Navy 2-week deal, which is coming up because that is the, that weekend is the time that I get home. So I'll be able to watch Assen.
Sweet.
Yeah. So it's working out good. They planned my Navy 2-week deal around the race schedule. Unfortunately, I have to wait 2 weeks to watch Catalunya, but but then I'll have a giant Sunday full of racing. On that, real quick, Hayden at Laguna on the Ducati. Going to go out of here on a limb. I would not be surprised to see Hayden not doing all that well.
No, he's not.
No.
But he might, he might be like in the top 10 or something.
Yeah, this year is super great for him. We'll see. And hopefully by then, maybe some of this whole new crew chief business and all of that will have started kicking in. Who knows? We'll know more in a couple of weeks on that one. So. All right, so 13th, Mika Kallio, like I said, 14th, Tony Elias, and 15th, Alex DeAngelis, which we already kind of discussed. And not classified, Danny Pedrosa and Yuki Takahashi. So,
Takahashi, nice.
that crash was a little odd. I hope he can pull things together because he's actually a good rider. Guy's got a lot of talent.
He was very good on the Scott team last year, but it's kind of funny because we got the Vizioso who came up from the Scott team, but he was challenging for the championship when he was in the 250s. Yuki, on the other hand, he was like a fourth type of runner. He was fighting for fourth very often. And this year we've got Hero on the Scott team, and he's doing extremely well on that Scott Honda. So it's going to be interesting because Hero's is due to come into MotoGP soon. So we'll see where he ends up and how he ends up doing. It's an interesting track these guys are taking into MotoGP.
Yeah, yeah. So, in a nutshell, are you somewhat saying that Takahashi was the team, the 250, the bike, and the 250 team that he was on with Team Scott, and all of that was as much helping Takahashi as any talent that Takahashi has? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, I think that there's something about that team that it's not just that they're getting good riders, but they really know how to make the most out of a bike that hasn't been developed in like 3 years, you know.
Right, right. That's true too. Yeah. Okay. Good point. Good point. So, all right. And what this does, like we did talk briefly about World Championship. Other than that, let's see. Stoner Lorenzo Rossi, like we said. Pedrosa, Dovizioso, we talked about them. Melandri in sixth still on 48 points.
Yep.
And Edwards seventh, 45. Caparossi. And then, starting getting down into somewhat really kind of just random silliness. RDP doing 10th in the championship right now.
That's
basically, he should be happy with that.
Yeah, that's basically where he always kind of ends up. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And Loris, remember, Loris has crashed twice, so.
That's true.
Him being in 8th is actually pretty awesome.
Right. Yeah, I'm looking at anything else that jumps out at me, and it's really kind of not. Other than that, it's down in that section. It's about what I sort of expect. Of the results, constructor. Wow, Yamaha's pulling out a big lead on Ducati, 115 points to 90 on the constructor championship.
Well, a surprise. They've got They've got
three
one
wins
rider.
And two. Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. Exactly, and that shows the team. Aspect of it, and that's also further reflected in the team points, which are even more drastic, which we never really talk about, the constructor and the team, because it's, I don't know, MotoGP is a rider thing, you're watching the rider, so all right,
250s.
Oh yeah, that was great stuff. And unfortunately I don't have like the results here in front of me or anything like
that's okay, but that's okay, because all we have to do is talk about the last lap.
All right, let's talk about the last lap of the 250 race.
Actually, let's talk about the qualifying in the 250s with Rafael de la Rosa. Have you seen the clip of him, what happened to him?
No, not in the qualifying, no.
Oh my god. Okay, so we've seen some pretty amazing saves in the past, like the famous Randy Mamola
at Spa or wherever it was. Yeah.
Yep. And then we had De Angelis a couple of years ago. Was it Turkey where he came off the track at like ridiculously fast and somehow did not crash going through the grass and just stopped before the wall? I think it was Turkey. And then we had Colin Edwards last year with where he lost the front end and picked the bike up with his knee and elbow and then waved to the crowd,
That one was spectacular.
And then there was so this year we have Rafael de la Rosa, who high-sided off the bike, landed next to the bike on his knees, holding onto the handlebars, rode the thing all just to the edge of the gravel, but not quite hit the gravel. Then managed to turn it back onto the track, still sliding on his knees, over the rumble strip, back onto the track. Swung his leg back over, got back on the bike, and kept going. But the race itself was, it was Simoncelli and Bautista all the way, with this guy, on a pink bike, sitting in third, just kind of watching the action, and then I forget exactly what lap it was on, but Bautista was getting past Simoncelli, and Simoncelli was fighting back, and there was a very questionable pass that Simoncelli attempted on Bautista, and ended up basically locking the two bikes together, and they both went off track, but they both didn't crash. Simoncelli took a much shorter parabolic route, whereas Bautista almost went to the wall, and so Simoncelli got back on the track, and of course the guy on the pink bike, Pessini, passed them both, and it really paid off that he was just sitting there watching it. He was probably cackling to himself.
The guy on the pink bike, I love that.
Dude, he was on the pink bike. I don't know.
Yeah, I know, but still, the guy on the pink bike.
The thing is, he's starting to look so much like George Michael, so, you know.
Oh, boy. Ow.
Anyway, so he took off, and you know, he thought he was probably home free, but Simoncelli actually ended up catching him, and the last lap of the 250 race, which was, by the way, running in wet. This was the entire race was wet.
Right, real wet.
Real wet, and that last lap was freaking unbelievable. It was incredible. It was they were doing everything they could. They knew they were pulling all the tricks out of the book, but Pessini did end up taking the win. So once again, we had Simoncelli, you know, doing something questionable at Mugello. The great, you know, Italian passion. Running off his Spaniard off the track.
Not a lot of love lost in general between Simoncelli and Battista.
No. But you know, I mean, it was last year was Simoncelli and Barbara that had the big clash. This year it was Battista.
Yeah.
And you know, and almost immediately after that incident, a little scrolly thing started going across the bottom of the screen that said, you know, they were going to
be investigating it and checking it out. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And Barbara, you know, well, actually, I mean, world championship standings for the 250s, Simoncelli's down in third. And
he had 2 0-point rounds.
Exactly. So, you know. Exactly. And that's hurting him. And he's hopefully those are his only mistakes he makes this year. And Barbara is also, you know, kind of tootling along. Right now, as far as numbers are concerned, the race is Battista and Yama.
Yeah, but Ayama did not have a great race at Mugello.
I agree, and I think
so. Simoncelli ended up getting fined.
Yes,
for this
it was like $5,000 or something.
$5,000.
Like that,
yeah, it's like probably pocket change at this point to him. But
I don't know. What did 250 riders get paid? You know, he's got it. Yeah, you're right. It's still
championship. I'm sure.
Yeah. He's probably got a pretty fat paycheck coming in.
Yeah,
and probably lots of endorsements and stuff too that we don't even hear about over here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was really, really good stuff going on there for that. So the 250s always provide good racing, and it's sad to see. And this leads into another thing I want to talk about is Moto2. There's all kinds of events going on in Moto2. Kenny Roberts Sr. apparently wants to run a Moto2 team.
Yep.
The variety of other things. I guess they've got a whole bunch of teams that want to enter, more teams than they're going to have room for. So,
Yeah.
So, you know, we were worried about Moto2 being kind of a, dismal failure. It's looking like, you know, it might, at least as far as participation concerned, might be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're going to have a lot of good teams, and that means that, and because, you know, even though there's a control power plant, which is kind of a shame for a GP race, a series, we're gonna have close racing,
right? Know? And it's still, you know, it's still a prototype frame, so it's, you know, with a lot of customer bikes and all that kind of thing they're going to be doing. I think I can deal with it. You know,
yeah.
I'll live with it as it's a feeder class, and hopefully it. This is one thing that I don't know yet at all. Does it make a natural sort of feeder class to the big boy bikes? You know, are these motorcycles going to ride in a similar sort of, you know, the things you learn in Moto2, are they going to translate to things that you can do in MotoGP? And I don't know. So
I'm sure they will better than the 250s, because the 250s have they're two strokes and
different
things.
Yeah. Well, that was one thing, though, that we talked, that the way the corner speed and all of that in 800 cc's was almost starting to, we had shifted away from the guys that came up on superbikes and dirt track and all of this with kicking out the rear end and all of that, and it had gone more over to a carrying your corner speed through the corners 250
style.
That
is a good point, because you know what, I bet these Moto2 bikes are going to be doing a lot of very different lines.
Yeah.
So you may be onto something there. Yeah, so we'll see. Well, we'll have to, I can't wait to see the first, you know, prototypes actually. I want to see a video of them riding around and see what they look like.
I agree. Yeah, it'll be fun. Yeah. And also that first season where they're still racing both is going to be interesting, because
but they're not.
Oh, I thought they were. What happened?
Nah, there's no 250s entering the championship.
Oh, so the rule is allowed, but nobody's actually entering? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I hadn't been following it that closely. Okay. So, well, that's a bummer. Because that was actually interesting in the first year of the 990s, you know, where every now and then this 500cc bike would, you know, surprise you. And
yeah, and you know, and then it raised also the questions at the end where, like, oh, if this guy had a 990, maybe he would have won.
Right. Well, you know. Yeah, good stuff to talk about. Armchair racing on Monday. Yeah. So, okay. I think that covers Mugello. Like I said, we got Catalunya coming up here June, the weekend of the 14th or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And, 12th, 13th, 14th will be Catalunya. And, looking forward to that. Catalunya is always good stuff, even though it's a, you know, big Herman Tilke Formula One style track. Moving on real quick. Let's see. We're always.
Well, we had that race in the U.S.
Yeah, a couple of races there. Yeah. And that was some good stuff. World Supers there in Miller Motorsports Park. Got several emails about the commentary. Speed TV ran American commentators, and they had Ralph Shaheen and Scott Russell. And actually, I thought Scott Russell did mostly okay on the color side, but it was disaster. I really, you know, I would have much preferred to hear Jonathan Green and you know, his sidekick of the week kind of thing, Scott Smart or whoever's going to have, because it just. I don't know. Didn't do it for me. One other thing we wanted to mention about Mugello. Kevin McDowell sent us a really cool, magical email. Yes. And did you want to?
No, you go ahead.
Okay.
Go
ahead. I got it right in front of me here. And this is cool because Kevin McDowell said, I just wanted to share my tale of Mugello with you guys. He says, 2 years ago, I was dating a girl named Liz, and I was on the MotoGP website at work, and just spur of the moment, I bought tickets to Mugello, which is kind of cool in itself, that just spur of the moment, you decide you're going to go to Mugello. You know, good for you, Kevin. That's awesome. He said, I called my friends, no surprise. So we started planning it, blah, blah, blah. So Kevin, friend, and Liz go, and they stayed in Florence, then to Rome, blah, blah, blah. He says, it was like a journey to Mecca. The race was phenomenal. Next day, Liz and I got engaged across from the Colosseum in Rome. And this girl's a keeper. The next Christmas, she got me the replica Rossi helmet from that race, and so on and so forth. He says, you must plan a trip to Mugello before Rossi retires, if at all possible. So congratulations, Kevin and Liz. That's really, really cool. And I think I replied something along the lines of, you know, romance in the rolling hills of Tuscany. but that's kind of cool. And I'm glad that you shared that with us. Wanted to throw that one out there.
Let's not forget that the helmet that year was the Italian heart.
Yes, exactly. And that's the one that Liz bought one of them. The heart on there. Yeah, exactly. So that's awesome. All right. Well, back to America and back to World Super Dupers at Miller Motorsports Park. Ben Spies breaks the record for pole positions, consecutive pole positions. Or with what? Seven in a row?
Seven in a row.
And
not just that, but it's all seven.
That's true.
That's what's so really crazy about it. If you think about it, like it's not just like a streak. I mean, it's like all of them this year.
Yeah, exactly. He's pretty much dominating, you know.
He's a freaking rookie.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been introducing my sister to motorcycle racing here a little bit, and I had to explain the whole thing about, well, World Supers, you know, yes, it's race 13 and 14, but this is only round 7, you know, blah blah blah. Blah. Because everything's a doubleheader. But yeah, Ben Spies on pole. Good stuff. Carlos Checa did a great job here last year. Qualified second. Chiannari third. Fabrizio fourth. Haga did not qualify so well because of a huge crash. Yeah, not good for Haga. Had a vicious high side. Now, did he actually, I mean, was he just like in general pain or is there something broken and stuff? Have you read any news on that one?
Well, you know, he doesn't break anything. He's only broken that one collarbone last year. That was it.
That's true. He's not a big breaker. But it definitely affected him for the race. You could tell. The guy was not on top form.
The other thing is that you know, if it wasn't for Fabrizio, you could just argue that Ducati is just horrible at this track. Because last year they did poorly, and this year all the Ducatis were having trouble, except for Fabrizio, who kind of, you know, breaks that theory.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. because qualified fourth and did very well in the races. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. The other guy you want to mention, Jamie Hacking, doing a wild card ride on a Kawasaki. Which particular Kawasaki? The Kawasaki World Superbike RT, the main factory team.
Right, and he definitely put the wild in wild card.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. A couple little points there. You got to beat your teammate, but maybe not into the ground. Although.
Exactly. Right on the last lap.
Oh, man. And that was brutal. Just. It comes in, stumps it, contact made. Poor Parks had a vicious high side. Hacking goes off, tootling around into the desert, and it was bad.
I do want to mention that coverage-wise, even though Spies had a runaway race, I still felt like they should have showed more of him. We probably got to see him maybe, for a total of like a minute in race one and a little bit more in race two because Fabrizio was sticking to him for a little while. And then Spies said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to beat you by another 9 seconds. So
kind of pretty much checked out. Yeah.
Actually, I think really Fabrizio just gave up.
Yeah. I think the discretion was the better part of valor attitude came in on that one. It was interesting stuff the way it worked out. Race one was red flagged.
That's right. We had Muggeridge who went down on the right in the middle of the track, and he was actually okay. He limped off, but they had trouble getting the bike out of the way, so they had to red flag it.
Right. And Spies had built up a considerable lead at that time, and
we had aggregate times.
Yes, the aggregate times. It wasn't a major factor in this race because Spies still won the second heat. But I'm sure that if we go far enough down the list, we'll find differences.
Yeah, like a tenth.
I know. But it's confusing. And if you're the guy that's rooting for somebody in tenth, actually, no. You only have to go down to third. Race one, heat two. Third.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, third across the line with Jonathan Ray, but actual aggregate time was Fabrizio.
Fabrizio, yeah. You're right.
And it's all buggered up right on from third. So, and that illustrates my example of an aggregate race. Now, since it wasn't the leader, it wasn't kind of playing so much of a into the announcers and all of that. They weren't having to go on and on explain that, well, even though Ben Spies is in third spot, he's still winning the race because of aggregate time and all of that, So, that's the part I hate.
Because we're all so stupid out here that we can't figure that out.
Well, actually, half the time doing all the math and stuff, I'm thinking, is he still winning? exactly. The dumbing down of it and explaining aggregate over and over and over and over. It's like, you told me once. I grasped the concept. And we got also a fair amount of email from people that said how great Miller was. And Utah of a thing, and Jim had those recordings and stuff, which I think demonstrates some of that. Sounds like he had a great time out there.
Well, so before we finish, talking about the racing, race two had a really, really incredible battle for that third spot on the podium. We had Ray and Haslam and Biaggi and Chiannari, and Smertz kind of bumped his way up there for a little bit, but especially those four, Ray, Biaggi, Haslam and Chiannari were just putting on an amazing show. And Biaggi, what was he starting at? What was his qualifying?
Biaggi gridded up
16th, right?
Yeah, 16th.
Yeah, so he was getting great starts both races. He did great starts and then really riding very hard. And of course, the Aprilia did have an advantage of a lot of the bikes on the front straight. I think he clocked at 192 miles an hour.
Wow.
On the front straight. So the battle at the end with Jonathan Ray and Leon Haslam was just crazy. And Haslam actually ended up, falling off and not finishing the race on the last lap because those two had a very different line entering the final corner. And Jonathan Ray was just somehow managing to always pull away. So he was always across the line just ahead of Haslam. No matter what Haslam did, he would get ahead of him in the curves. And then that last corner, it wasn't that the machine was – they're both on Hondas. It wasn't that the machine was fast or anything like that. It was just Jonathan Ray had that last corner just nailed.
He did. He was getting drive out of the corners every time, especially that last corner. It was insane. And and seeing Haslam's crash was heartbreaking.
Oh God. It's great to see that they're willing to put that on the line, though, you know?
Yeah.
Because he could have settled for fourth. And, well, I mean, settling for fourth would have been hard because Chiari was pretty strong, too, in Viaggi, so...
Right. He could have finished the race. It was, though. It was that part was fantastic because those guys were in a very, very tight group and just a lot of, great battles going on that whole race. And then watching it, and you got no idea what's going, what's going to be the result. And then that crash was like, oh.
Yeah, but something had to give there, you know?
yeah, exactly. And great for Jonathan Rea, kudos to him. But yeah, and a little bit of our somewhat quickie coverage of, actually, let's talk about the World Championship standings.
Oh, yeah, because obviously we had 2 ninth place finishes from Haga and first place finishes from Ben Spies, so he suddenly cut that lead quite a bit. I think 38 points.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, I don't have it right in front of me right now, so I'll have to pull it up. Of
well, it's 265 and 212 now.
So massive gain by Ben Spies into Haga's lead, because we've been talking about how Haga is Mr. Consistency this year and how much it's been like working for him. And that Spies, although Spies is fantastic. Obviously, these the pole positions are demonstrating that this guy's got a lot of talent, but he still somewhat has mixed luck. He's either winning the races or basically not getting any points. And whether it's a crash or a mechanical or whatever reason is.
I mean, he had a couple of mishaps that were really. Mechanical. I mean, he had the.
I know. That's what I'm saying. But whether it was a crash or a mechanical, whatever, some reason or another, are those mechanicals all going to magically go away? Are they going to, oh, wow, look, that one part? I don't think that's going to be the case. They may continue to have trouble through the year. It could be not, right?
Yeah, let's hope.
yes. Completely unbiased here at MotoGPOD. We don't want Haga to win the championship. But no, that's you're right. He's got to, I want Haga to win the championship. Haga's got to win this championship.
What I think would be really interesting, actually, is to see if Haga is going to, if Spies, let's say, has another, DNF for some reason, what's going to happen for second place? Because Fabrizio is just not giving up that chase,
It's that's like, true.
In the race, this is Ben Spies pulled out a little bit on Fabrizio this one, but not nearly enough to be safe. He's only 11 points ahead of Fabrizio.
That's
so
nothing. In a series where round 7 of
they've got 14.
So total. 28 races, and they've done half of them. So they're at the midway point, and 11 points is nothing. That's going to change more than once through the. To the rest of the season.
And they're going to Misano next, which is going to be very
interesting. I was
interesting
just going to say, exactly. It's going to be super interesting. Actually, and also, they've got a lot of interesting tracks coming up, because after that, they do Donington. Let's see, Imola is also going to be another interesting one, and Portimao. Brno, Nürburgring, Magny Cur, those will probably also be good races, but I don't think they'll be quite so much interesting, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, I can't wait to Portimao. That race was actually
that's
cool.
Great. That one's a cool track. Well, all right, there's World Supers, unless you got some more stuff to cover about World Super Dupers.
So I don't, but I haven't seen a Super Sport race, unfortunately. But I know that there was some controversy at the end.
A bit. And it was a very good race, so definitely watch that. We won't talk about it too much because we've run out of time, and I don't want to spoil anything for you. I think other than that, we're probably about done because we've still got some more stuff to do on the show. So why don't we say goodbye for this week, and we'll talk again next week. And then after that, I'm taking off my 2 weeks. So it'll just be on you, Jules, doing the show by yourself because I got to do my Navy thing.
Right on. I'll talk like this and I'll mention MotoGP Matters a lot. And,
oh, wow, that's brutal. Okay.
And then at the end, I'll say ciao.
We'll talk to you later, Jules. Bye-bye.
All right.
Ciao.
Ciao.
All right. Like I said, super, super long show. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks very much for downloading it. A couple of little news bits. Let's see. Dayofstars.org. Okay. The Day of Stars is a charity event that benefits Riders for Health, which we've all heard about Riders for Health funding doctors that can travel around on motorcycles in Africa, going to very, very remote places on motorcycles to give medical help to people that just, you know, have no other alternative. And so this is a good thing. We've often talked about it. Day of Stars is a really cool opportunity down at Laguna to go and spend some time with the stars of MotoGP, Randy Mamola, you know, all these kind of guys. It's a huge thing. You get to go out and do a ride around the wine country of Napa Valley and all that business. You get, you know, a nice lunch, a lot of schmoozing, special pit walk. It's very, very cool stuff. Check it out. And why it's cool, well, why I think it's cool, is that Jules is going to be there. I am going to be there. Adam Silver, a longtime friend of MotoGPOD, is going to be there. And let's see, Rob and John from Powersport Dynamic, also longtime friends of MotoGP, are going to be there. So right there, that's five people. We've covered like 10% of the tickets that are involved for this Day of Stars thing. So check it out, dayofstars.org. And I'll tell you what, if you decide you're going to go and everything, sign up on the website, dayofstars.org, and maybe mention that you heard about it on MotoGPOD. But Jules talked me into it. You know, he heard about it and kind of got involved and decided he wanted to do it. And he says, Bob, you got to do this. And so, okay, fine. I'm going to do it too. So I'm going to go down there even a further day early for Laguna this year, for the July 4th weekend, that is. And this takes place on Thursday. It's going to be really, really great stuff. There's not a lot of tickets available. So if you do want to go, you need to jump right on it, dayofstars.org. And let's see. I think that about covers it. I know I've forgotten a lot of stuff for this show. It's been a very long day, folks, but we got it all edited together. And again, like I said, thanks a lot for downloading the show. Hope you enjoyed it a lot, and we will talk to you again next week, and we're going to have our Catalunya preview.
This is Jules, and I'm here at the World Superbike event in Miller Motorsports Park, which is in Utah, just outside of Salt Lake City. And this week in MotoGP, they ran the Mugello race this morning, and the winner is not who you think, but I'll get into that later. And I'm standing here at the end of the Salt Lake double from World Superbike, where Texas, Longview, Texas born Ben Spies came out to get the pole position and do the double, and Ben Spies did it. It's been quite a weekend. Also this week, Marco Melandri on the Dornasaki said that he'd like to continue later this season riding, and we're all very excited for that because it seems like he's riding the bike well. And in other news, Dave Emmett from Kropotkin on MotoGPMatters.com had a nice little piece that he wrote, and I think you all should check it out. So, once again, this is Jules, Pop Monkey.
He always says,
ciao.
MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.